Christmas Eve, sometime between 6 and 10 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, the North Koreans are going to test an intercontinental ballistic missile.
That, the prediction of an expert on North Korea. This is Tuesday, the 24th of December. You're listening to VOA Asia. I'm Ira Melman in Washington. You can be a part of this program. Join us at VOA Asia Facebook and find out how. Also ahead, a message in a Christmas card leads to an investigation of a Chinese prison. The Silicon Valley of California is running into some strong opposition. And you'll hear from a woman on a journey with other women on the lookout for plastic pollution. It's all on VOA Asia. With North Korea signaling bigger provocations in 2020, some analysts are worrying that the country's leader, Kim Jong-un, could overplay his hand and make a dangerous miscalculation, especially if Kim believes he can affect U.S. President Donald Trump's re-election chances. Those are the thoughts of Bill Gallo, the VOA correspondent based in Seoul. North Korea has set an end-of-the-year deadline for the U.S. to offer more concessions in nuclear talks and promised Washington a sinister Christmas gift, possibly a long-range missile test, which could upset nearly 2 years of diplomacy between Trump and Kim. Joining us to talk about this is Harry Kazianis, Senior Director of Korean Studies at the Center for the National Interest. Harry, this move does suggest kind of an emboldenment that Kim thinks he can hold out for a better deal, possibly because he sees Trump as being weakened by impeachment and a tough re-election campaign that's sent to enter a more intense phase. Do you agree with it?
Well, I think that's what Kim thinks. I don't know if I necessarily agree with his thinking on that, but I think that's the sign. I think Kim is very frustrated. I think he went to the Hanoi summit back in February thinking he was going to get a deal with Donald Trump. But I think we all forgot one thing. All do U.S. domestic politics rule the day. And unfortunately, there was no way that Donald Trump was going to grant any concessions in Hanoi, especially with Michael Cohen testifying in Congress literally as Donald Trump touched down in Hanoi, and as well as not knowing what was going to happen with the Mueller probe. So we've been through a couple months now of basically stasis. Nothing's happened. We had some working level talks in October that fell apart within hours, and now the North Koreans are making these threats. What I think they're going to do is, I think on Christmas Eve, sometime between 6 and 10 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, the North Koreans are going to test an intercontinental ballistic missile, the type of missile that can hit the U.S. homeland.
So what is the reaction, do you think, to not only the United States, but by South Korea, by Japan, by China? What do you think?
Well, if that does indeed happen, I've spoken to several White House advisors, and what they've all said is pretty much universal. Donald Trump is going to take that as a personal insult, that North Korea would break a self-imposed moratorium on long-range missile tests would essentially be, you know, a shot right across Donald Trump's bow. And I think you'd see him immediately go on Twitter, start doing what he did back in 2017, calling Kim Rocket Man, you know, saying this is unacceptable and it won't stand. You know, I think the regional impact is going to be pretty clear as well. Poor Moon Jae-in of South Korea has essentially staked his whole presidency on having detente with North Korea. And he has big April elections coming up that could damage his ruling party. So I think he's going to have to take a tougher line. Shinzo Abe of Japan, their prime minister, I mean, he has also signaled very strongly that he'd like to have talks with Kim, probably because Japan is going to host the Summer Olympic Games coming in 2020. So he certainly doesn't want to have any provocations from North Korea and have them disrupt those games. So I think the impact of an ICBM test is clear, and I think we know, you know, generally how everybody's going to respond.
Why do you think, and most other people think, that it is going to be a long-range missile test?
Well, I think you've got to just put all the evidence together, and it just strongly points to that. The North Koreans have said that they're going to deliver a Christmas package to the United States, and it's up to the United States on what that is. So I think that's, you know, it's a big splash of a Christmas package. That sounds very eerie to what the North Koreans said they were going to do back in July of 2017 when they tested their very first ICBM. They called it a gift package. And they did it right the night before July 4th. It was around 10 p.m. on July 3rd, 2017, when they did that. They also have said things that they might show the Japanese a ballistic missile test. I'm paraphrasing, but that was about a month ago, which indicates that they might fling the ICBM, it basically straight up in the air, but going over Japan. And they've made a lot of other statements, too, that say that they might break their moratorium on long-range missile testing. And the funny thing is, they keep saying it over and over and over. So I would be pretty shocked if Kim did nothing. That's been the analysis of some experts, and I just think it's flat-out wrong.
Some are saying that he might kind of pull back a little bit or just show that he's fooling the United States and the rest of the world by just launching a satellite.
Well, there would be some strong indicators of that. Usually the North Koreans have tried to conduct themselves as, I guess, what you could call a responsible space power, putting out naval moratoriums, signaling where the satellite or pieces of the missile where that would launch that would drop off into the ocean, sort of warning maritime agencies and other parties that could come down. Also, their space facilities are, you can see them by satellite, and there would be a lot of preparation for that type of launch, and we haven't seen any indicators of that. And to be quite frank, it takes months to prep that. So I unfortunately wish they were doing that, but it doesn't seem likely.
What about on the other end of things, resumption of nuclear testing?
Well, that would be terrifying, to be honest with you, because I'm not sure how the Trump administration would respond to that. But that's also something that we would see pretty clearly. Their Punggye-ri nuclear facilities have been closed down, or the North Koreans claim they've closed them down. But what they've done essentially is detonate the entryways to those places where the North Koreans would detonate those nuclear weapons. So I think we would start seeing them excavate those sites to prep for a nuclear test. So I don't think that's going to happen. The only thing that could be a shocker here is if the North Koreans have developed another nuclear proving ground underground somewhere and they detonate a nuclear weapon. But so far, we've got no indications of that.
Harry Kazianis is Senior Director of Korean Studies at the Center for the National Interest. Harry, thank you for doing this. Happy holidays to you. And as far as Korea is concerned, may next year be better than this.
I hope. Take care. Thanks again.
These are among the top Asia headlines you'll find right now at voanews.com. The Australian Prime Minister Scott Morrison has apologized for going to Hawaii on a family vacation while wildfires raged across southern Australia. He and his family are back in Australia now. Afghanistan's incumbent president Ashraf Ghani has apparently won a second five-year term based on preliminary results announced Sunday for the disputed September 28th presidential vote. China and Malaysia, old friends with a complex trade and investment relationship, are disagreeing over Malaysia's rights to extend sovereignty into part of a disputed sea that's rich in fossil fuel reserves. Hong Kong police Monday defended their use of force against protesters at a Uyghur Muslim support rally over the weekend. VOA Asia continues. A British supermarket chain has launched an investigation after a six-year-old girl found a handwritten message in a package of Christmas cards produced in a Chinese factory, allegedly written by prisoners who are used as forced labor. Officials of the Tesco chain said they have suspended the production of the charity Christmas card in the Shanghai facility after the note was discovered, and they're investigating what's behind it. More from VOA's Latissa Hoke.
The handwritten note says, "We are foreign prisoners in Shanghai Qingpu Prison, China, forced to work against our will. Please help us and notify human rights organization." It was discovered by six-year-old Florence Widdicombe from Tooting, southwest London, while she was writing Christmas greetings on charity cards purchased in a Tesco store.
We opened them about a week ago, and we were writing in them, and about on my sixth or eighth card, there was somebody already written in it.
Florence's parents were in for a surprise when they checked the card.
And when my wife looked at the card, it of course said what it did, which is that the card had come from somebody imprisoned in Shanghai and was raising human rights concerns and asked whoever found the note to pass it on to Peter Humphreys.
Peter Humphrey is a former British corporate investigator who was imprisoned in China for 2 years.
I spent 2 years in captivity in Shanghai between 2013 and 2015. And my final 9 months of that captivity was in this very prison, in this very cell block where this message has come from. So this was written by some of my cellmates from that period who are still there serving sentences.
Humphrey says he believes the message was written by one of his former cellmates.
When I was there, manufacturing labour work was voluntary. prisoners could do that as a way to earn the pennies that they need to buy daily necessities like soap and toothpaste and biscuits. But what has happened in the last year or so is that work has become compulsory.
Tesco officials issued a statement saying they have halted the production of cards in the Shanghai factory and launched an investigation. The statement says Tesco abhors the use of prison labor and would never use it in its supply chain. The company also says it will not sell any more of these cards while the case is being investigated. Humphrey says foreign companies ordering products to be made in China have no control over how they are made, but with that in mind, they should not hire Chinese companies.
There are plenty of friendly countries around the world with free and open societies where labor is not very expensive, where you can make these things.
Exporting prison-produced goods is illegal under international trade laws, but major news media have reported on China's practice of exploiting prison labor, based on reports from former inmates. Zlatica Hoke, VOA News, Washington.
Happening now in Asia, protests against the controversial citizenship bill in India continued despite a government ban against demonstrations. Some 23 people have been killed in nearly 2 weeks of demonstrations and violence after India's parliament passed the Citizenship Amendment Act, which critics have deemed anti-Muslim. You are listening to VOA Asia. It has been a very rocky year for the relationship between Washington and Silicon Valley, and next year could be even worse. Lawmakers and regulators in the nation's capital are scrutinizing technology firms over a host of issues: competition, online privacy, encryption, bias, and their promising action. Michelle Quinn reports on how the frustrations could lead to new regulations that could have a global impact on how people communicate online.
In Washington, the outrage over Silicon Valley seems to keep mounting.
People are angry and scared more than ever before. And they don't care whether it's a federal law or a state law. They want a law.
It's time to break up these big companies so they don't have so much power over everyone else.
Senators Richard Blumenthal and Elizabeth Warren are among a chorus of lawmakers looking critically at tech companies as powerful gatekeepers. Big tech, as it is now called, is being criticized by both Democrats and Republicans. And in the coming year, the pressure will likely increase. Carl Gardino, president and chief executive of the Silicon Valley Leadership Group, represents many of the region's tech firms.
It's fascinating when you think of the relationship between the nation's capital and the world's innovation capital. While it is not headed for divorce court, it is not the blossoming romance that it once was.
Instead of romance, there are now threats of fines over things like violating users' privacy or stifling competition. New laws could give American users more control over their online data. They could also restrict companies' ability to sell user information, worth billions of dollars, to advertisers. Zoe Lofgren has represented Silicon Valley in Congress since 1994.
Americans, not just Americans, people, internet users around the world are concerned about the privacy of their data, and I think we need to set some rules for that.
Foreign users of American tech products could also see changes if lawmakers follow through on threats to break up large companies like Facebook, transforming its popular apps such as Instagram into a separate competitor. Sally Hubbard is the Director of Enforcement Strategy at the Open Markets Institute, a research group that focuses on antitrust issues.
This is a global issue. These are global monopolies. I do think that people are looking to America to take a leadership role in reining in our own companies.
Garrett Johnson has had a hand in both tech as an entrepreneur and the federal government as a staff member on the Senate Foreign Relations Committee. He is now the executive director of Lincoln Network, a nonprofit organization that aims to bridge the gap between technology and Washington, D.C.
D.C. is waking up to the massive impact that tech has on society, culture, the economy. And Silicon Valley is waking up to the societal impacts that it has, not only on our democracy, but, you know, on the economy, on jobs. And so there's this collision that's happening, and it's just being noticed more now.
At the same time Washington scrutinizes Silicon Valley, there is growing concern over China's expanding role in advanced global communications and whether the authoritarian country can be entrusted with user data. Larry Diamond is a senior fellow at the Hoover Institution at Stanford University.
If Huawei or any Chinese company is able to build the telecom infrastructure of another country, another city, other places in the world, you have to assume that baked into the Huawei technology is going to be the transfer of all the data back to Chinese supercomputers.
Will Washington break up Facebook or impose tight regulations on user data? How will the global competition with China play out? The answers will likely shape daily communications for the estimated 5 billion people who will be online in 2020, the majority of the world. Michelle Quinn, VOA News, San Francisco.
Stay with us. Coming your way, another attempt to show the problem of plastic pollution. You're listening to VOA Asia.
News is mobile, and so are you. Get VOA on the go. Get VOA on Google Currents. Get VOA News specifically made for your tablet and smartphone. Clean, simple, fast. Now available for Android or Apple phones or tablets. Download the Google Currents app for free today. Get VOA on Google Currents at voanews.com/currents.
This news alert from VOA Asia. Hundreds of people marched in Yangon, Myanmar. They were demanding justice for a 2-year-old girl known as Victoria. She was raped at her nursery. The family of Victoria is suing the police for revealing their identity. Visit VOA Asia Facebook every day for top stories and great features to see and share. This is VOA Asia. Much attention has started to be placed on the issue of plastic in the ocean. A unique mission is underway to highlight the impacts. The nonprofit organization X Expedition is an all-women sailing voyage around the world. It's conducting research on ocean plastic and toxic materials, the effects on human health, animal life, and the Earth's ecosystems. My VOA colleague Lori London spoke with Julie Anderson, Global Executive Director of Plastic Oceans International, who just got back from taking part in one leg of the 2-year all-female sailing voyage.
I really wanted to really become part of seeing it with my own eyes, and becoming part of this mission was to go into the ocean, see the plastics, be part of the citizen science of collecting data, so that not only as I go out and I talk, that people take my word, becomes more credible, because I can say I've seen it, and I can honestly believe that we are contributing to a problem that's affecting the environment. And what was so unique about this organization, it's called X Expedition, the XX representing the female component, because it is an all-female crew going around the world, 30 legs over 18 months. I was fortunate enough to join the leg 4 from Antigua to Aruba and collect samples both on land, and they will be submitted to 2 different universities, one in the University of Plymouth in the UK to analyze the plastic concentration around the world, as well as the where plastic is entering the ocean. So we actually collected samples on land, which will be submitted to the University of Georgia, where we're trying to target how the plastic's really getting into the oceans.
What do you feel like you know now that you are able to really communicate better than you would have?
It's with my own eyes, seeing that there is still a great need for awareness of plastic pollution. And then the second takeaway is really how impactful it is to educate individuals so that they go back to their communities and demonstrate their newfound knowledge and influence within their communities. And I think the reason I think it is so important to have all women, I think we forget how influential women are in society in really creating change, because women tend to be the food shoppers in their family homes, tend to influence their friend groups in their purchasing power. And with plastic pollution, those are some key ways to reduce plastic pollution.
That was Julie Anderson, Global Executive Director of Plastic Oceans International, speaking with International Edition's Laurie London. Here's a news break from VOA Asia. China said Monday that it has lodged stern representations to the United States after its Senate passed a key spending bill with bolstered military support for Taiwan included. Remember to visit VOA Asia on YouTube, Instagram, and Twitter. This is VOA Asia. Now on VOA Asia, after Thanksgiving, many Americans usually start getting ready for the next big holiday. That's Christmas, by going out to get a Christmas tree to decorate. For an increasing number of the 95 million homes in the U.S. that will have a tree, artificial trees are gaining popularity. But for most people, it's just not Christmas if their house doesn't smell like a pine forest. Jana Grindblatt has the story.
When Christmas comes around, Americans start decorating their houses with ornaments, stockings, and of course, Christmas trees. And though more people are choosing to buy artificial trees because there is less mess and less cost, most Americans still head to special nurseries and tree stands to pick their own. The Werners have owned such a nursery in Vermont for almost four decades.
My siblings and I are all grown up and have moved away and work other jobs, but we like to come home around Christmas time and work on the farm with our parents. I've been out in the shop helping since I was five or six. I don't know how helpful I was then.
Thanksgiving is not a holiday for the Werners. For them, this day is the official start of the Christmas season, the busiest time at the farm.
We open to the public on the Friday after Thanksgiving, and we close at 3 o'clock on Christmas Eve. The busiest time is the first 2 weeks after Thanksgiving. On our busiest days, we will have a car come down our driveway every 5 minutes.
Visitors at the farm can either buy an already cut tree or grab a saw and chop down their own. Amanda Werner loves it, but has a warning for those with a bit too much Christmas spirit.
Trees always look much bigger inside your house than they do outside. So this year, I've got this cute little tree. I'm gonna have plenty of room. Bring it home, put it up, and I have an inch to spare. So if I can't judge, I know that other people can't either.
Amanda's brother William is biogeochemist at Harvard Forest.
What it basically means is I study how energy and elements move through ecosystems.
He says that while buying a fake Christmas tree may seem more environmentally sustainable than chopping a real one down, that's not necessarily true.
With the plastic Christmas tree, you pull the oil out of the ground, you get it to the refinery, you go through that whole process. Here, we grow it from the ground like a crop. So you're cleaning the air, you get some watershed protection, you get something much closer to a natural system than you're going to see in a factory.
Even though fir trees naturally grow in Vermont in the wild, raising a beautiful Christmas tree is not as easy as it seems.
So we're taking that away. That's 8 inches, so that's...
The prettiest shaped trees quickly get sold, and the ones that didn't get picked are turned into wreaths and decorations. Add a few ornaments, lights, and a pile of intricately wrapped gifts underneath, and it means that Christmas has arrived. Jana Grindblatt for VOA News, Middlebury, Vermont.
This is Science in a Minute.
In 2012, NASA's Kepler spacecraft discovered three odd exoplanets circling a 500 million-year-old star some 2,400 light-years away. 2 years later, scientists found that the planets seemed to have a lower density than any planet in the solar system, and that they appeared to be light, fluffy, and resembled cotton candy, the favorite circus treat. A team of scientists led by researchers at the University of Colorado Boulder recently used the Hubble Space Telescope to confirm these earlier findings and find that the planets in the Kepler-51 star system represent a new class of exoplanets nicknamed superpuffs. According to NASA, although they each have a mass that's no more than several times that of Earth, because of their atmospheres of hydrogen and helium are so bloated, they are nearly the size of Jupiter. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
You have been listening to VOA Asia. Thanks for joining us. Thanks to our director, Tracy Carter, our engineer, Kelvin Fowler. The managing editor is Diane Gao, and our VOA Asia team is composed of Jim Stevenson, Keith Lane, and Doug Bernard. I'm Ira Melman. I'm in Washington. Have a wonderful day.